Welcome back to the interactive portion of the program where we take your phone calls. Rich Newman with us. We're initially talking about the ghosts of the Civil War, but any paranormal question will do when we come right back. Back with Rich Newman, back with your phone calls as we talk about the paranormal. Have you ever been scared, Rich, on any of these hunts?
I would be more scared of something not happening than actually being scared of ghosts. So, but yeah, I've been caught off guard for sure. You know, like when you walk into a dark room and you're already expecting something haunted to be happening there, you can get caught off guard. And I've certainly had a voice in the ear or felt something touch my back out of nowhere or something like that and startle me for sure.
But you never really felt threatened, have you?
No, you know, I'm so excited about being around something happening, and I'm so keyed in on trying to capture the activity. And, you know, when you ghost hunt, you know, it's one of the things that ghost hunters don't like to talk about, but you spend so many hours sitting there bored with nothing happening, nothing going on. And when stuff starts happening, I get excited, and I'm jumping up and grabbing the gear and going after it. And so I really don't have time to, you know, be afraid or think about any sort of negative repercussions or anything.
Why do people, though, take, strange Hollywood movies so darn serious?
Well, part of it, I think, is personal experiences. I think a lot of people do have encounters with the paranormal. I mean, by now, you certainly know this is, you know, more than anyone, the amount of, you know, shows you've done at this point on the paranormal. I mean, you have people, you know, run into the paranormal, whether it's ghosts or a Bigfoot or a UFO experience. You know, it sticks with them. And then when they see these portrayals on a big screen, you know, with music backing it up and these great actors into the moment, you know, it just sort of rehashes all the personal things that happen to people with that regard. And so I think a lot of people take it very seriously.
No, they sure do. They sure do. And there have been some pretty interesting hauntings, too. So I think these entities sometimes are really out to hurt people.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, like we brought up the Warrens before, and you just read through some of the cases that, you know, that they've been to, and they were certainly some malevolent spirits there out to go after these kids and these families. And, you know, whether it was something as mundane as just run them out of the house or if it was as nefarious as wanting to possess one of them and take possession of their soul, for sure, there's scary hauntings out there.
What's your favorite ghost movie?
My favorite ghost movie has to go to The Shining. I love the movie The Shining.
That's one of the scary ones.
That is one of the scary ones. I mean, come on, talk about your fear of children ghosts. Two twin children ghosts standing in the hall saying, "Play with us forever."
Yeah,
Annie.
Exactly. I like The Sixth Sense. That was good.
Yeah, I liked it because it was a really interesting portrayal of ghosts, too, and how, you know, we saw a ghost that was just a person who had passed away and wasn't aware that they had done so. And that's one of the things that so many ghost hunters out there report in different places they go, where a ghost, you know, they call it a residual haunt, where they're sort of trapped in the routine of being alive, and they just don't even realize they're dead. You know, and that's, you know, such a common, I loved how they spun that in that movie.
They gave us some clues and signs to pick it up early, but it was over most of our heads.
Yeah, it for sure was. And you know, if you were actually around, you know, watching it at the theater and all that stuff, you know, it was one of those big secrets, you know, don't tell the ending of the movie.
That's right.
And
if you managed
to stay away from the spoilers, yeah, it was absolutely out of nowhere. It was brilliantly done.
Do you think the media is a little more acceptable to ghost stories, haunted places, and things like that?
I think they're more acceptable to marketable ghost stories and haunted places. I think that a lot of the crazier things that get reported, and I mean, we call it the paranormal for a reason. These are not normal events, you know, that happen in all these stories, and they don't easily fall into the category of ghost story or, you know, possession or, you know, any of these sort of paranormal events aren't so easily labeled. And I think when it is a clear-cut ghost story, when it is a clear-cut sort of a spooky story, then they're all over it. But then when it's something where you don't know how much of it was a person's psychology or where maybe they have crazy and what was real and what was not real, you know, maybe an avant-garde filmmaker would love that story. but most of Hollywood don't want to touch it.
What's your favorite haunted location?
My favorite haunted location is the Limp Mansion in St. Louis.
I know it well.
Just left.
Know it yeah. well.
The story of the Limp family and the
lots of suicides. Lots of suicides
oh
in that house.
Well, half the family committed suicide. It's crazy. And the activity they have in there is just fantastic.
For people who don't know, they were brewery people. You know, Anheuser-Busch was there, based in St. Louis. It still has offices there, though they were bought out. But the Limp Mansion was a brewery, and that family, you know, made beer and made a lot of money. But the people were haunted in that family. And like you said, half of them killed themselves.
They were, and they didn't take Prohibition well. They opted to close down, you know, Limp Beer when Prohibition kicked in, and they didn't think it was going to stick around as long as it did, but it was just long enough to make them run out of money. And when that money went away and their status went away, well, out came the handguns.
And then they went away.
They went away. And, well, debatable.
Every Halloween, every Halloween they open that mansion up, and they let people tour it.
It's fantastic. If you can stay in the Charles Limp suite, I would say that that's one of the highest probabilities of having a ghostly encounter in an American hotel.
What do you think of The Exorcist and the fact that that happened in St. Louis, too?
Yeah, I love all that stuff. You know, one of my co-writers with Llewellyn, Mr. LaChance, wrote a couple of great things about the haunting and the exorcism and thing that took place there with that. It's all super fascinating. I love that when all the stories started coming out from the priests in their firsthand accounts and everything, being involved with that. I mean, it's such a historic case anyway because of Mr. Blatty's book and, of course, the movie. But when you get behind the scenes and you see the reality of just how many days they put into this exorcist, how much effort went into just helping this one boy, it's fantastic. It's crazy.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to Robert in Elvin, Illinois, east of the Rockies. Robert, get us started. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for accepting my call, George.
Sure.
I was wondering if your guest ever considered investigating Jonestown, Guyana, and I'll take my answer off here.
All right, Jonestown, what do you think?
Oh, man.
I mean, a lot of tragedy happened there.
A lot of tragedy. I would be happy to go to a place like that. It wouldn't be that unlike, as far as the, you know, body counts, you know, a battlefield. But I would think that those last moments of those poor people in Jonestown when they were being, you know, fed that horrible poison, you know, I say Kool-Aid, but we know it's poison, and they were dropping around, you know, and if you've ever heard the audio files, when Jim Jones was actually encouraging them all to take that poison and give it to their kids, and you can hear the kids crying in the background and the wails and everything that's going on, it's nightmare fuel. So, I mean, I definitely think that's got to be a haunted place, and I'd take a crack at it for sure.
Okay, we've got Isaiah now in Arizona. Isaiah, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Norrie. Good morning. You're a lovely guest also as well.
Thank you.
I was listening. I wanted just to make a comment. I was listening, and the experience that I've had while you were speaking, Mr. Norrie, regard the soul also and demons and things of that nature. In the studies that I've had personally and also my personal conviction, the fallen angels in Genesis chapter 6, as the previous guest also spoke about, when they were intimate with the women, it is believed that after those giants came about, once they died, then out of them they became demonic, the demons indeed. And those that were not known as fallen angels, but now they're known as demons with the purpose to try to bring the soul of a person. Now, the soul, it represents three things: the will of human being, the mind, and the emotions of a human being. So it is believed that the soul is both wanted by Christ and by the demons, because Christ came to die for the soul. The demons want to possess the soul one way or another. And you have been speaking also with regards to how to get these demonic things out. I've seen in my own personal life that there has to be a faith, because of course you can use the name of Jesus. You know, you can go to Mexico, there's a whole bunch of Jesus over there, but you can use the name of Jesus. But if there's no conviction in the power that he has given unto us, then you're not going to be able to see through triumph. I just had a few days ago speaking to some people, went to their homes, they were seeing black shadows, and there were knives going up and down, and they were experimenting their three-year-old daughter some things. And when we went over there, we prayed for the place, we blessed the place, and then we began to catch what we believe were demonic forces. But I had the conviction, not in myself, but the conviction in that Jesus had power. He rebuked demons, he cast out demons, and that by faith he gives us the opportunity also to do that. So what I've seen personally is that these things, one way or another, have a purpose, and the purpose is to destroy and to kill. And then with regards to hell, I'll leave it with this. I don't know, Mr. Lori, if you had the opportunity, your guest, to listen to, I believe there was some Russian scientists that they were within the ground. They were trying to search something underground, and they had this little microphone. And as the microphone was going deeper, they began to listen to noises, and they began to hear like people screaming and stuff like that and yelling, and they themselves were shocked that were not.
Oh, yeah, we've had that clip for years. We used to play it. It sounds like a rush hour at a shopping center on Black Friday after Thanksgiving, but it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. Go ahead, Rich.
Well, I would definitely add to what he's saying that I think that having religious conviction can go a long way with people who are experiencing hauntings too, because, you know, like we said before, maybe a ghost, you know, a Buddhist ghost, say, wouldn't have much effect, you know, if you're throwing the name of Jesus out there. But if the family that's living there is Christian and they're getting that name, then it sort of bolsters their morale, and just that positivity going into the home can go a long way with getting rid of those ghosts.
How important is the belief system then of the individual before a ghost even appears?
Extremely, extremely important, because, I mean, they're going to interpret the activity that happens there within their belief system. And if a great example, I think, is because, like, the Warrens became famous because of their Catholicism and their viewpoints in that regard, because most Catholics don't want to believe in actual ghosts. So it was much quicker for the Warrens to come to the conclusion that there was an inhuman spirit in a lot of these hauntings than, say, a non-religious ghost hunter would come to that conclusion. So even with ghost hunters, their belief system is absolutely in play with that whole thing, as well as the belief system of the spirits.
Let's go to Sharon in Massachusetts. Welcome to the program, Cher. Go ahead. Hi.
I could not take it anymore.
You couldn't take what? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Oh, well, off you go. She couldn't take it anymore. Must have a ghost there. Brenda's with us in West Virginia, though. Welcome to the show. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, George. Old buddy, old pal, old friend of mine.
You sound like Barry now. Oh, no.
I'm going to hurt Barry. He always gets through a lot easier than I do. I'd like to find out how he's doing it. Been a long time since I talked to you guys.
Yes. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you. I live in West Virginia on the Maryland, where Maryland and Pennsylvania and West Virginia come together in the corner there, and so I'm not very far from Gettysburg, and I've been there quite a few times and did ghost hunts myself for about 13 years. But I have a story about Gettysburg that I've never heard anybody else say, so I want to tell you guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I went into town one day. I think it was my first time in there, and Gettysburg is just this little tiny town, you know, and I was looking for a hotel because I was going to spend the weekend. And I stopped at the Holiday Inn and went in and was checking the rooms there and stuff, and an UPS lady came in, was driving an UPS truck, you know, delivering packages, and she heard me complaining about how high priced the rooms were. And I went back outside, and she was getting in her truck, and she said, "Hey, I know where you can get a really cheap, nice, clean room." I said, "Well, tell me, you know." And she pointed up the road and at this house, and it was the old orphanage there where, you know, they kept the kids and everything, was supposed to be haunted, and they tortured the kids in the basement and all that. But I didn't know all that at the time. But Anyway, she said, listen, go up there and knock on the door. And she said, wait for a long time because there's two old sisters that live there and run this big old house as boarding rents. And she said, but you have to wait because it takes them a long time to get to the door because they're like in their 80s or 90s or something really old, you know. So we did and knocked on the door and waited and waited and waited. Well, finally, one of them came, you know. And we went in and talked to the old lady for a little bit and got a room and went up and changed our clothes and took a nap and everything and decided we was going to go out for the ghost hunt at night. They do a bus tours at night, the ghost tours. And really interesting place, by the way. That place is haunted. I swear to God, when I got out of the car and stepped on the ground, you could just feel it. But anyway, she said, well, do you want a key to the room, or are you going to be back before 11 o'clock? I said, well, we'll be back right after the ghost tour. And so we come back, and we get there, and her, she's sitting in the living room, and her maid, which is like about 40 years old. And we talked to them for a long time, and then went on the bed. And the next day, was out doing certain things, but we never did see the other lady, the other sister, just the one that the Ups lady was telling us about. And so I just asked this old lady, I said, well, where is your sister? And she said, I don't have a sister.
Oh, boy.
That's no kidding. I couldn't believe it. And I just, me and my husband, my daughter was there, and we got, you know, I'm sure our mouth dropped open and everything else. And I said, you don't have another sister here? And they just looked at me like I was crazy, you know. So they got another sister.
Were they aware of this at all?
Well, all I know is that's what the Ups lady told me.
Yeah.
You know? And so I go in there, and it's just the one old lady and her maid was the only ones in the place.
All righty. Good story. I love it. You could write another book, Rich, just from stories.
For sure. Well, it sounds like she might have ran into the spirit of Rosa. That was supposed to be the ghost of the evil mistress who was beating the children and things there. She was ran out of town, but a lot of people believe that after she died, she went back and haunted that orphanage.
I wonder why. Why do they haunt anyways?
Hey, you know, I'm totally believe in the unfinished business thing. You know, unfortunately, like, again, you know, we talk about these evil spirits and these bad spirits. Sometimes their unfinished business is just more misery. But if she ran into Rosa, it sounds like she's in a better mood now.
Indeed. Mike's with us, truck driving in Louisiana, first-time caller. Michael, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My first-time calling. I have a little quick story. Before I started trucking, I was a security guard in Louisiana at a plantation, and I've seen a light come across the river and go into a building, and you can actually see somebody walking in and out.
Wow.
Walking around a building and stuff like that. Now let me ask you a question. Those plantations that we see, is that where most of the Civil War happens?
Describe what Gettysburg looks like, Rich. I've not been there.
Well, Gettysburg was a small town in Pennsylvania. So you have, you know, what looks like a giant park in town, which is now the actual battlefield, Civil War Park. And it's surrounded by historical structures that were mostly homes back during the Civil War, but have now been mostly turned into everything from little bed and breakfast to like this orphanage museum to places like that. A lot of the plantations, you know, because they were homes that belonged to Southern gentlemen that most likely were fighting for the Confederacy, when those Union troops would move in, they would typically take over those plantations. And, yeah, you know, it's kind of hit and miss on the ghost stories in those places. They usually tend to end up being people who lived there during the day that, you know, when all this tragedy was happening.
But the hauntings must be unbelievable, though.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's on top of, you know, all the cruelty and things happening to the actual slaves.
Exactly. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, Rich, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Rich Newman. Rich, what some of the witnesses at Gettysburg, what have they described? What have they seen?
I would say the typical story is usually more along the lines of hearing sounds of the battle. I think the most common story is hearing gunfire, people, the sound of soldiers yelling and screaming, and just generally the idea, you know, of people fighting and shooting and cannons going off and all that kind of stuff. And then I would say the second thing would be probably more along the lines of running into cold spots and things on Saks Bridge and
feeling like there's a presence with them on the battlefield, a lot of personal stuff like that.
Well, I got to say that it's probably one of the most remarkable sights for these kinds of apparitions, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, Devil's Den itself is so notorious because of the death that happened there during the second day of that battle that I would find it hard that anyone could stand in that spot and not feel some sort of just the weight of all the misery that happened there.
Okay, back to the calls we go. Final segment, Joe in Long Island, New York. Joe, take it away.
Hi, Rich. Great segment. I was thinking the zombie movies, for example, Night of the Living Dead and that TV series The Walking Dead, I see them as being derived from Gone with the Wind and Scarlett O'Hara's experience in that movie where, you know, she's on the battlefield and she's just like, what is going on? You know, this is like a bunch of zombies. And I relate it to your story as well with the bridge. It's either we'll get killed on the battlefield or we're going to hang you on the bridge. And even the end of the Night of the Living Dead had racial overtones where this guy survived the whole zombie apocalypse and then wakes up only to have the rednecks shoot him.
Oh, well, I definitely love that movie. I've never heard anyone compare zombies to, you know, Scarlett O'Hara, and that's an interesting perspective. But I you know, that's one of the old sayings, though, is, you know, war is hell. And so a lot of the soldiers that come back from the war and survive these battles, I would have to think that they feel a lot like a zombie. But I hopefully we'll never actually see real zombies come from, you know, the Civil War spirits or anything like that.
Would you say, Rich, that most battlefields must be haunted?
Yes, just simply because it does, you know, when you have that much death and that much emotional trauma happening in a small area, the land is just made to hold on to some of this stuff. And it's more and more seems to be the fact that the environment does play into how much it's able to retain memories of events and the bits left behind of the human soul, depending on how traumatic it is or how awful it was. And we certainly know that the Civil War was full of misery.
Yes, it was. Nothing happy about it, that's for sure. Let's go next to Larry in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hi, Larry. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I want to tell you about a supernatural event that happens at the Vicksburg Civil War Battleground.
Okay.
It happens at the Illinois Monument. And the Illinois Monument is a building that's modeled after the Pantheon. And there's one step up, going up to it, a step each day for the siege of Vicksburg. And Lincoln said, I'm going to take Vicksburg and put it in my pocket. And when I do, this will determine the outcome of the war. So you go inside, there's a big dome, and there's a circle on top of the dome. And it has never rained in there. No matter how hard the storm, the rain has never gone through that open circle to the sky. Inside, or going around the dome, is a plaque of every man's name in the Illinois Regiment. And on the floor is a mosaic that goes around the circle, it's got 12-spoke medicine wheel-like to the center, which is another circle which exactly matches that circle in the ceiling. And if you go in there and you make a right-hand turn and you walk around and you pass in review of every man in the Illinois Regiment, you walk straight to the center and you stand in the center of that circle, you look down and you see the seal of the state of Illinois. You can take a penny out of your pocket and sew it up, and it'll just keep on going right up out through the top.
How do you explain that?
Well, I don't know, but I asked the ranger. I said, how come it's never rained in there? Well, you know, the rain never comes straight down, or the wind always blows it out. Okay. I said, what about flipping the penny? Oh, we really don't want you to flip penny. Why? Is it against the law? No, but if you flip the penny, it might go over and hit somebody in there and injure them. Or if it did keep on going and went up to the top, why, it might land in the grass outside and the lawnmower might hit it. So they know what it'll do, but they don't want you to do it.
Interesting take there. That's a heck of a penny toss, to be sure. Rich, let's take some final calls here, but tell us a little bit about The Devil in the Delta.
The Devil in the Delta was a case that I worked on in Mississippi that involved a family who believed that their trailer was actually infested with a demon.
The trailer. And, okay, interesting.
And it's just, it covers all the research of the case and all the weird things and twists and turns that it took. And, you know, there was just a lot to do there with the haunting and their beliefs and then what turned out to be a little bit of trickery on their part. And I kind of wrote it as a cautionary sort of tale for ghost hunters to, you know, kind of figure out what they're getting into when they want to ghost hunt.
Were they scamming you?
Not so much scamming as just, you know, like they would say, oh, we're just innocent and we're being haunted and we didn't do anything. And then, you know, I would go in the bathroom and pull a rug up, and there was like a Ouija board drawn on the floor.
Oh, geez.
Like, well, you're not doing anything. Why is there a Ouija board drawn on your bathroom floor?
Yeah, and who did it? You know.
That kind of thing.
Tehachapi, California, we've got Ed now going for us. Edward, hi.
Edwin.
All right, close.
You're close. It's good to hear you back in California, George. I'm glad you made it safely.
I did. Thanks. It was close.
Oh, I watched the weather reports. I thought, oh, poor George. I have an interesting story. Growing up in Pittsburgh, I wasn't that far away from Gettysburg, and occasionally I'd hear stories, particularly from reenactors, you know, the people that get together to reenact the,
yes,
the different battles. And, Rich, I heard a story a long time ago, and I don't know, you were mentioning before the common things that happen at the battlefields. This was kind of interesting. Two guys were in one of these reenactments, and they were near a hill or a tree or something where they were kind of, you know, hiding out and watching and getting ready to shoot. And one of the guys said, you know, I'm out of bullets, fake bullets, but, you know, they were just pretending. But anyway, all of a sudden this guy shows up. They were wondering, well, where'd he come from? He crouched down with them, kind of, they were behind, you know, he was kind of behind their shoulder. So he starts talking. He said, here, I've got some bullets you can use. And they looked at his uniform and they go, wow, you know, he's this real spiffy reenactor. He's really got a nice uniform compared to our ratty uniforms. and he gave them some bullets. And then they, you know, they're kind of interested in watching the battle. Their focus was not what was behind them, but in front of them. But anyway, they said thank you, and they didn't hear him say anything. And they turned around, and he wasn't there anymore. And they examined the bullets later on and said, geez, these are authentic Civil War bullets.
Oh, geez, that's great.
So this guy, I mean, think of it this from a psychological point of view. This guy was drawn into the battle enough to become visible, give them some bullets, okay? I mean, like interested in the war. I mean, what did it look like from his perspective being drawn into a reenactment? You know what, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. The real deal in a reenactment. What do you think? They play role that, Rich?
Well, for sure. I mean, reenactments, you know, they get the spirits thinking, oh, you know, oh, wow, we're back in this again. And it gets them active, and they see what's happening around them, and they want to participate in there. Reenactors running into spirits and seeing things on the battlefield and mysterious, almost like other units walking across, you know, the field, and then they find out there wasn't even a unit stationed over on that part of the battlefield. Those stories do come out of these reenactors, and they probably had more experiences than anyone out there.
We've got Wayne in Tacoma, Washington now, west of the Rockies. Hi, Wayne.
Good evening, Sir George.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'd like to make a short statement, if I may, and ask a question.
Sure.
And I have a short question for you too, George. First of all, we've had a lot of programs on lately dealing with living for eternity, you know, in this life, in the future life, so forth. And I know that all religions, Christian religions, say in their dogma that we're all going to live for eternity. And the only real choice we have is where we're going to go. We're here to learn to worship and praise God and enjoy him forever. And that's what eternity is all about. And the realm of ghosts, Rich, are spirits. I'm sure you'd agree with me on that, right?
Oh, sure.
Okay. And you know the story of Saul in the Bible, where he had the prophet of God, Samuel, who had been his advisor and warned Saul several times against things and had died. And Saul was desperate to get some answers for something, and so he went to the witch of Endor and asked her to bring up the spirit of Saul. And when the spirit of Saul did come up, it scared the you-know-what out of her.
Oh,
and
I bet, yeah.
And you know what happened to Saul? It ended up killing him. So just as a matter of safety, when you go into these places and call up some spirits, it's really demons imitating human beings. When Satan was standing before God and God asked him, "Where have you been?" He said, "Well, I've been walking to and fro throughout the earth." And, you know, he brought one third of the angels of heaven down with him. We're talking about billions of angels. And most of them are in hell, but there are some on earth that are allowed to walk around and learn about people's lives, and they imitate these people's lives after they're dead, and that's what these ghosts are. That's what I absolutely am certain of. And, George, the question I have for you is just a simple one. John Hutchinson, we haven't heard from him for a long time, at Tesla Technologies.
It's been a while. We need to check into it.
Yeah, I would like to hear him again, because I think he's just as interesting as some of the fabulous guests you've had on before about the type of technology. So okay. I'd appreciate hearing from him.
Okay, thanks, Wayne. I appreciate that. The stories are abound, Rich. They're just amazing, and the different effects that the other side has on people. Have you ever been at in a point where you felt threatened?
No, I really don't feel threatened by ghosts and spirits. And I think it's because I've had a very neutral upbringing,
mm-hmm.
religious wise. I mean, my father's family were Catholic. My mother's side of the family were Pentecostal. And so I've sort of had kind of a neutral Christian upbringing. But like we mentioned before, the Warrens, you know, sort of have that old school Catholicism thought that there aren't really a lot of human spirits running around, that it's mostly sort of evil spirits that are pretending to be human, things
right,
like that.
Right. They think everything's evil.
Absolutely. And I've had mostly positive experiences, you know, with hauntings and things like that. But, you know, maybe, you know, like I always tell the non-believer, maybe I'm one bad experience away from being a little scared.
Roxanne's with us in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, first-time caller. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks.
I'm glad you got your flight on Friday. We were worried about
Oh, geez.
There are some questions that I wanted to ask, if somebody can explain. You mentioned the guff in heaven. I don't understand that. And I have an affinity for the color periwinkle. And my cousin said I'm an old soul, and I participated in help with the soldiers during the Civil War, and I have dreams that have come true, and I just don't know what to do with this. I don't know whether to put it in the box and throw it away or just pursue it from this point on. I don't know what you or Rich thinks.
Rich, what do you think about that? And then I'll talk about the guff real fast.
Well, I think if you have a fascination with ghosts and it's permeating your dream and things like that, that maybe you should go check it out for yourself. Maybe take a trip to the battlefield and try to put yourself in the position of, you know, the spirits of the Civil War that were out in those places, and maybe your dreams will change and evolve, and you'll learn a little bit more about them.
The guff evolved from the ancient Hebrews and the Torah, and it is a hall of records for souls. It's where souls wait to come back and get into a human body. And there was talk that we would run out of souls. Did you ever hear that story, Rich?
I have heard of that. That's a kind of a reincarnation story, right?
Yep, it sure is. It sure is. But what's amazing is how the old-time studies kind of blend in with what's going on today. It's really one of a kind. Rich, thanks for being on the program. Appreciate it. Rich's book, of course, the latest Ghosts of the Civil War, exploring the paranormal history of America's deadliest war. He's also got the Ghost Hunter's Field Guide, Ghost Hunting for Beginners. That's always fun. And Haunted Bridges. I had him on back in October of 2017 to talk about that. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.